Genesis chapter 11, the Tower of Babel. Did it really exist? Real quickly, remember where we're at? As we continue to go verse by verse through the scriptures, we are just out of the flood. It's receding. The earth is being repopulated. And last week, or a couple weeks ago, thanks, Blake, for taking over last Wednesday and last Sunday, chapter 10, God told Shem, Ham, and Japheth, spread out, fill the whole earth. But there was a guy, Ham's grandson, a fellow by the name of Nimrod. His name means, I will rebel. He said, I'm not going to do that. No, don't spread out. Let's all clump together in huge cities. Well, he built two of them. He builds Nineveh, which will eventually become the capital for the Assyrian Empire. Well, they gave Israel a very rough time. And Babylon, as we'll see here tonight, the anti-city. Some people have described the Bible as a tale of two cities, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Yahweh's peace, God's peace. Babylon means pathway, really the wrong path. And later, of course, Babel or to Babel means gibberish. Over 800 times, the Bible mentions Jerusalem specifically, and we're going to see that the devil has tried several times to rebuild his own Babylon. More on that in a moment. Well, Nimrod is about to build everyone's rebellious. He's going to bring them all together, all the engineers and all the smart thinkers, and he's going to bring them together to build the Tower of Babel. Really, human rebellion against God. Verse 1. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. Verse 2. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Where is this? Glad you asked, Chris. In fact, I believe you have a map about it. Ding! There it is. Here's a quick little relief map of the Persian Gulf. It's been in the news a lot lately. How many of you can pick out the Strait of Hormuz right away? Well, there it is. A lot of problems going on there. But look up to the middle left. There's Babylon. And then you see that beautiful valley. There are two rivers there, the Euphrates and the Tigris. Mesopotamia means between the floods. That is the Fertile Crescent, or one portion of it. And that is where the plains of Shinar is. Hit our go button. Here's a little zoom in. No. There it is right there. We went back in the Wayback Machine. We got a picture of it. Well, actually, what that is what's called the Neo-Babylonian city of Babylon. That represents Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, after he defeats Pharaoh Necho in the Battle of Carchemish, this is the first world empire, and that is the first world empire city. Well, that's a picture, an artist's rendition of Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. But for the sake of your imagination, that's the plains of Shinar. And they dwelt there. Verse 3, and then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city. Here comes the city of Babylon. You need to know something, that everybody say every rebellion, every false religion, every occultic practice, every spiritism, occultism, Ouija boards, astrology, all started here in the plains of Shinar. And that's important, because you might be asking yourselves, what's the big deal about Babylon? Whew, watch this. Anyway, there's Babylon. It's rebellious. And what do societies do when they get rich and maybe a little big for their britches? Well, they build towers. Did the United States, America, when we became so wealthy, especially after World War II, did we sort of flex our industrial and architectural muscles and towers? We sure did. The Empire State Building was before the war, of course, but after that, when any culture gets to have some sort of poking their chest out, One of the things we want to do is we want to show off our tower. And in America, for a little while, the two tallest towers in the world was the World Trade Center. And if you will, I believe that spiritually speaking, that New York and the harbor thereof, I believe serves nicely as a model for the gate, if you will, of the city of America. And the two gate posts, as you know, on 9/11, God allowed an ingenious attack that flew right under the radar. We are the best military, best trained, best equipment, satellites, and everything, and they still flew under the radar. Need to check out Isaiah chapter 9 and Isaiah chapter 10. When God has been knocking on the door, the gates, if you will, of a city, and that city and that America, if you will, our country, is still headlong running into, well, basically doing their own thing. God, because we wouldn't listen to the moth, he sends the lion. And it was highly symbolic. When the two, what? Towers, if you will, the gates of the entire continent of America, maybe, was God trying to tell us something? If you read Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 10, you might get some insight on what happens. Babylon rises to become a major world empire. And by the time we get to Daniel, 5 centuries before Jesus, Babylon is the first world empire. It is the enemy trying to do his own thing. And God is going to use Babylon to facilitate God's judgment on a God rejecting Israel. And Nebuchadnezzar lays siege to Jerusalem, conquers it, and deports the best and the brightest back to Babylon. Or, if you will, that would be Daniel. He does that twice, and then the third time, Nebuchadnezzar destroys Jerusalem entirely. All the exiles are living there in Babylon for 70 years. Did you know that 300 years later, you're going to have the Babylonians, who are then going to be overtaken by the Medes and the Persians. That's King Cyrus the Great. And then after the Medes and the Persians are going to come the Greeks, and that's Alexander the Great. And in his early 30s, Alexander wept on his bed, for there were no more kingdoms to conquer. Where was his bed when he was doing that? Babylon. Alexander the Great had drawings on the drawing board to dredge the Euphrates River and have ocean-going vessels making their way up the Euphrates River, up the plains of Shinar, because he wanted to move the Greek capital from Greece to Babylon. But he died. Next to this chapter here, we're getting ready in chapter 11, near verse 1 or 2 or 3. Would you write these three pairs of verses? Babylon is illustrated in 6 more verses. Write Isaiah 13 and 14, Jeremiah 50 and 51, and of course, Revelation 17 and 18. God tells us in those 6 chapters why he allowed Babylon to rise to a certain prominence, why he was going to use them to try to get the attention of a God rejecting but still going to church like crazy God's people in Israel. And finally, God will destroy Babylon, a mighty city that will be the most impressive human structures ever built. That's going to be the big city that's going to burn and just be destroyed in 1 hour. And that's in Revelation chapter 18. Well, let's continue. We're at verse 4 now. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Oh, those crazy Babylonian ancient people. They're thinking they're going to build a big old tower and then they'll be able to scratch or whatever the canopy of the blue canvas. They were serious engineers even at this early age, but they had a notion of actually having a war with God and some other things. If that's interesting to you, there's a non-biblical book called the Book of Enoch that talks about these things. but it was widely circulated. It was maybe the Maccabees, if you will, of its day. And so there were portions of the book of Enoch that were found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And your Bible, in the case of the New Testament, actually mentions a couple verses, if that's the right word, or mentionings of the book of Enoch. And you read there that it was quite a struggle. Those Nephilim that were born because the demons were somehow manifesting physiologically enough to transmit genetic matter to the human women, and these wacko, weirdo giants called Nephilim, or fallen ones, are as a result. It is quite a story. They were giants. Oh, you mean like Shaquille O'Neal? No. Some of the accounts that they were more than 100 feet tall. That's a 10-story building walking at you. Well, anyway, all of this was not some quaint notion of maybe we can touch the blue canvas of the sky. No. They were very much concerned with having a war with God himself. We're going to make a name for ourselves. We're the ones that killed God, or so they thought, lest we be, look at this, scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Wait a minute, isn't that what God told Shem, Ham, Japheth? We don't want to do that. Hit our go button. Well, here is an artist's rendition of maybe the Tower of Babel. I don't know, it's a fanciful thing. But this one, I'd like to show you this next one. Go. This is a painting by Peter Bruegel. He finished it in 1653. Today it hangs in Vienna. But you'll notice there that there's some guys to the bottom left of the slide. Those are the elders. And if you take a kind of a real deep look at this particular painting, you'll see that this structure is strong on the bottom, but weaker the higher that it goes. And finally, if you have a good keen eye, you'll see there in the middle bottom portion, it's actually beginning to cave in on itself. The idea that Mr. Bruegel was trying to basically say is, look at the humans thinking that they're all that in a bag of chips, and when they want to, they build this big old structure, but Bruegel is saying, but it's not going to work and it's not going to last. What is the Tower of Babel? It's inspired by Lucifer himself through the human Nimrod and his followers. It is a fist to God that we don't need you, God, and in fact, we believe that we can take shots at you with our bows and arrows when we get to the very top of our tower. It was an incredible and amazing human endeavor. Watch how amazing it is. God's going to finally have to come down and say, I got to confound the languages. The Tower of Babel is history's first government-funded public works project. That's what it is. What is the tower's theme? This particular tower. It is, let's all work together using all the tools and abilities that God has given us to build this tower and shake our fist at that God. And Nimrod, as you might have guessed, is kind of a model of the very first dictator. I want all of that human industry to go together to build my tower. God said, go out. Nimrod says, stay together. Oh, and by the way, is it me or have you noticed that in urban areas of lots and lots of humans together, it's a whole different mindset than, say, like where Nicole comes from, the Midwest and the farming, and you make your living literally out of the dirt and the seasons. Have you noticed that there are two very different sort of understandings of God and fellow man? In the urban areas, it's kind of one way. In, as God has said, spread out, it's a whole nother ballgame. Well, here's the very first governmental public works system. Here's the tower's theme. Let's all get together, use all of everything that God gave us, and let us build my tower. In the Old Testament book of Daniel, chapters 2 and 7, they prophesy that the devil is going to be behind five great world empires. The first one was Babylon. The second is going to be the Medo-Persians, as we said, that's King Cyrus the Great. And then the third is going to be Greece under Alexander the Great. And then it's going to be Rome, but actually in two phases. We've termed it Rome A, which is what you remember as the Caesars and the gladiatorial games and all the nonsense there. Well, that is going to not be singularly sort of conquered. It's going to fade. And then the Bible promises, Daniel 2, Daniel 7, that Rome B will rise in the very last days. That's the fifth and final world empire that the devil is going to have his hands all over. It's fascinating. I want you to get a good look at Peter Bruegel's painting. You got it in your mind's eye. It's fascinating that in the last day, Rome B is going to rise from Rome A, and it's going to have a capital. Check this out. That's true. Did you know that there's the United States of Europe? Go. Here's their capital building. Beautiful structure. This is in Brussels, Belgium. And the 27 states of the United States of Europe, if you put a map of the old Roman Empire over the top, there are striking similarities. I believe we are seeing Rome B rise, and the functionality is already in place. That is a building that representatives from all over the United or the European Union, they meet together in a big old parliament building and they decide policies that affect a supranational organization. It's already there. They have their own money. They have their own national anthem. They are in the processes even now of raising an army, a significant army. Really and truly, the apparatus is in place for the Antichrist to step in and give it supernatural shwammy. But I want you to check out the building on the right. Hit the go button. Let's take the other portion away. I want you to notice this architecture, and you might be thinking, you know what? That looks a lot like Peter Bruegel's tower, unfinished on purpose. And you would be correct. The architect of the Capitol building of the European Union deliberately designed that structure to closely resemble the Tower of Babel, Peter Bruegel style. Are you sure? Go ahead. Here is a poster that ran. You don't really see it much anymore, but in the 90s and early 2000s, this was one of the rallying cries. That is Europe, many tongues, one voice. Do you see the Tower of Babel? Hit the up arrow. Ding. Hit the down arrow, ding. And to your right, are you seeing it with me? The humans don't know what they're doing, but the devil sure does. Is that the devil snickering? I told you Babylon was coming back. Just saying. And also, too, you got to see this. I want you to see what's just outside of the front door. Go. This sculpture, and that's a woman riding the beast. That's Revelation chapter 17. I know. That is Europa, and that is Zeus, who was taken on the form of a bull, etc., etc., in that story. But how many of you also can see very plainly a woman riding the beast? And just saying. Well, anyway, back on the plains of Shinar, go back there. Well, what happened to it? What happened to the mighty city of Babylon? Well, what happens is King Cyrus the Great, he overtakes it. He lives in it for a while, and he runs the region from there. And then what happens is Alexander the Great comes next. He thinks the city of Babylon is all that too. He wants to move his capital. He dies there. What happens after that? The actual city of Babylon, because the trade routes have shifted and adjusted, just fades away. And a lot of the stone of the wall that was 11 miles around, 200 feet tall, they were redistributed for housing and they were shipped away. And for the longest of time, the desert, the plains of Shinar, reclaimed that entire region. And it lay largely dormant and scattered until the 1850s, when a couple archaeologists went poking around and they found many of the foundations of the Temple of Marduk there, the wall, etc., etc. and they've reconstructed it in an artist's rendition that you've seen me show a thousand times. But what happens after that? What was happening in Babylon was not just magic tricks. The word magi comes from this region. And today, you know, magistrate in the case of the political realm, but magician, you know, pick a card, that lives in our mind often as kind of a fun little non-consequential situation. But what was going on in Babylon was astounding. There was things that they would do called remote reading, where someone would close their eyes and ask the spirit to guide them, and they would be whisked away in their consciousness, and they could read documents in another room or across the city. Some of their priests were so into their various sort of occultic religions that they could move objects around at will. Telekinesis, astral projection, Ouija boards, all kinds of supernatural stuff was going on in the Neo-Babylonian or Nebuchadnezzar era, but had started in the plains of Shinar centuries in front of that. And there was, it would seem, a college of the best of the occultic priests and priestesses and practices that set up shop there in Babylon. Cyrus the Great encounters that same college, and he is like, wow, this is pretty impressive. There's a great story that people have done. Historical sleuths have kind of put together a very interesting trail. Hit our go button if you would. They found that eventually, when you start digging, that many of the occult practices and items that they found, they get digging in Turkey, Western Turkey. This is the ancient city of Pergamum. The new city is down there in the valley. But on top of this mountain, this was Pergamum. Do you see that Colosseum-type theater? Yeah, don't drop your popcorn. That's a long way down to the front. But anyway, what was Pergamum? They found out that a lot of the college, after Cyrus the Great had captured Babylon, the college picked up and moved to Pergamum. Hit our go button. Here's another shot of it. That's the ruins of Pergamum, or Pergamus, that the book of Revelation talks about. What's my next slide go? There's what it looked like back then. What's with the building? Why they put it on top of the hill like that? Because it was very exclusive. There was only one way, and it was up the backside. You had to have a special tile and get a certain sort of comp, if you will, that cost a whole lot of money. What they wanted to do was build, because of their Greek origin, they wanted to rebuild Mount Olympus. So they built it up there, and the only people that could go up there were the rich, the famous, the writers, the scientists, the social planners, the who's who and what's what of all humanity, not just in what we would say Turkey, but they would sail in from all over the world. And in that theater were these great productions, the top-of-the-line actors, and often they were very bawdy and very sensual. But when they started digging around here, they found out that the College of Occultic Honchos, after Cyrus the Great conquered Babylon, moved en masse to Pergamum. There it is. Hit or go, bud? Go. Who are these guys? On the top there, this is William Burkhart, G.H. Pember, Richard Ritzenstein, and Samuel Angus, and a guy on the bottom there, that's Alexander Hislop, who wrote a book called Tale of Two Cities. More recently, scholarship continued. Go with these guys. F.F. Bruce, go ahead. F.F. Bruce, and most recently, a guy by the name of David Hunt. And his book is called A Woman Rides the Beast. These are the guys who followed the historic trail that the College of the Occult moved from Babylon to Pergamus. You remember in the book of Revelation, one of the descriptions of Pergamus, where Satan dwells. Why is that important? These guys have written much of the evidence that when Cyrus the Great, a Persian, conquered Babylon, 539 BC, the bulk of the Babylonian priests, priestesses, and magi moved their college to Pergamum, where Satan dwells. Here's some background. This is important. Prior to Alexander the Great, Pergamum was mostly just kind of a bump on the hill. There's from the bottom of the valley, and you're looking up there, and it was just kind of a hill. It was not much to it. And just across the Aegean Sea from Turkey would be, of course, Greece. And in this region, Greek lore and myths said that this area is where Zeus was born. And Zeus, of course, is the head honcho god, and Mount Olympus, whatever. As the Greek political control began to wane, because who's on the rise? Here come the Romans. The city fathers of Pergamos saw the changing wind, and a bunch of guys called the Attalid kings, they allied quickly and early with the upstart Romans, and the Romans said, well, thank you very much. Eventually, Rome gave them the authority over most of Asia Minor, which is Turkey. They got rich fast, and controlling the trade routes from the Mediterranean, Aegean, and Black Seas on three sides, Pergamum's king grew hugely wealthy, and the Attalid Empire ruled over most of Turkey for 150 years, their capital, Pergamum. What did they do with their endless wealth and influence? Still in love with their Greek culture, they built their own Mount Olympus on the top of that hill. Here's the ruins. More ruins, different angle. There it is there. With so much archaeology done, do you want to see Pergamos, what it looked like back then in the day? Look like this. Pretty amazing. And those buildings are practically perfectly placed because the foundations of all of them still remain. All right. So we got to see, do a little hit or go button at the top left. There should be, there you go. There's the Temple of Trajan. Who's Trajan? He was a Roman emperor. Emperor worship was huge here, so they built him a nice temple. Here's a close-up of it. Inside. It was amazing. The great colonnade that you see there called the Stoa was 125 feet by 150 feet. And it was called by the Christians the seat of Satan. There was a great altar there, and that statue that you see, a little thing off to the left, was actually a lot taller than that. It was 150 feet tall. This is one of the marble colonnades that was found on the site. If you don't speak Greek, right there, that means Trajan is Kurios. Trajan is God. That's what it says there. There it was. That was emperor worship. Let's look around a little bit more. Hit the go button. Right here. Here's the library. It was the second largest library in all the world behind the library at Alexandria, Egypt. Hit our go button. Let's go in for a closer look at it. There it was there. That little building to the left, that's the Temple of Athena. She's the goddess of wisdom. So, as I said, the largest library aside from Alexandria was there. Intellect. You want to be an intellectual kind of, show your stuff. If you think you're smart and all that, go to Pergamum. Read in the library. And the intelligentsia of the day all congregated there. Here's another port I got to show you. Over here, this is called the Great Altar to Zeus. Pretty amazing. Hit the go button. It was discovered. There's a close-up of what it looked like. It was uncovered, the foundation, and most of the stones were found in 1870s. And you sure it looked like that? See the colored reliefs there? Hit the go button, Yeah, most of those stones have been found, collected, and there they are, reassembled, in the Pergamum Museum in Berlin. That is the actual facade and the portion of that temple to Zeus. Let's go back outside again. Hit the go button again. There's that theater. And here's what it is today. Hit our go button. One more shot of it. Would you see a show in that steep of a terrain? I don't know. Like I say, don't lose your popcorn on that one. And I want to show you this too. Hit our go button again. Let's go back to the drawing. Go again. There is the temple to Dionysus. Who's Dionysus? He was the god of wine, entertainment, and, quote, ecstasy. What's that? That is the buzz and the altered state of your consciousness was largely regarded as freedom to plug your head into the things of the spirit. So inebriation was a goal and a high achievement. Now, I want you to notice where the temple of Dionysus is. It's at the bottom, if you will, stage left. So you would go to the theater, and the best, the Spielbergs of their day, the Jim Camerons of their day, would be paid great sums of money to put on these often body, often fleshly sort of, and in some cases entirely nude kinds of goings on. And then if that, you know, sort of got you whatever, you could walk right over to the Temple of Dionysus and fulfill whatever it was that was being acted out there upon the stage. All that was happening on top of that mountain. Now, why is that important? It was purposely built here, next to the theater entertainment. So with endless wealth and Rome's legal protection, the kings of Pergamum transformed a small fort hill into Mount Olympus. Oh, I forgot to show you. See the temple to Dionysus? Go. Yeah, they found a lot of that too. There it is. That's the front of it that is also in the museum, the Pergamon Museum in Berlin. Hit our go button again. So there it was. Now, the typical person down in the valley, you could only sort of listen to the music, the thump, and hear the laughter. And you knew that up on that hill was the best and the brightest and the talented and the celebrities were having a blast. But that was out of your reach because you didn't have a certain tile, a ticket to get in to come up the back. That was truly the 1% of the world at that time living it up. The Vegas on a hill in its prime. Hit our go button again. There it was, and this time, what would happen is they would invite the world's wealthy, the best actors, musicians, writers, intellectual elites, and influencers. Let's all hang out together. Endless entertainment and drugs and spiritual and sexual excess. Why? Because Babylon had moved to that location. Imagine what demonic strongholds and deceptions the devil could pour into those influencers who were literally opening up their brains to the demonic. And then they would get all these cool ideas, get back in their ships and go back to their native lands and spread all of that garbage. What a plan the enemy had. Who then, they take it back to all their homes and infect their own cities? Ha, I wrote, those crazy ancients, how silly. That would never happen today. Get all the intellectuals and free-spirited people and get them flowing with drugs, etc., and free sex. That doesn't happen today. Go. Yeah, it does. Less than 90 miles from here, actually. You know what that is. Go. That's Burning Man. Every influencer, every one percenter practically, the best and the brightest have all attended Burning Man. And as they talk and share one another, then they get back in their cars. We know because their Lear jets are often parked right across the street from here. And they go back with brand new ideas because they have touched the ethereal plane. Harvest, is Babylon still alive? Yes, it is. And the Antichrist is going to be the one that's going to actually pull it off. The thing is, today, you don't have to hike up Pergamos Hill and jump into that lifestyle. All those influencers and entertainment, sexual enticements, they don't live on a hilltop. They live here. Go. They come to you in your phone. The enemy is not stupid. And Babylon is all around us. There's more. Remember all that occultic practices that God calls an abomination that began in Babylon, the Anti-City on the plains of Shinar, 133 B.C. Let me see. 133 B.C., Pergamum kings gave the city to the Romans. Hit our historians one more time. Go real quickly. These are the guys, Burkett, Pember, Ratzen Stein, Samuel Angus, Alexander Hislop, F.F. Bruce, and David Hunt. They found some very important things. The Roman elites are quite impressed by these mythical and mystical priesthoods. And the College of the Mystical Priests and Occultic Practices are relocated to where? Rome. Let me read you a little bit from Chuck Missler, also a historian of his own right. Quote, "The Roman Catholic Church constitutes the major part of the history of the Middle Ages. The Chaldean priests, or Babylonian priests, who interpreted the esoteric doctrines of Babylon's mystery cults were called the Peter, a.k.a., or that is to say, the interpreter. That was your high honcho. He was called a Peter. It was a term for an office. And he wore an insignia of two keys, the keys of Janus and Sibyl, which still appear, where? On the papal or the Pope's coat of arms as symbols of spiritual authority." Are you seeing this? The plains of Shinar where all occultism started. Cyrus the Great, the Persian, conquers it. He says, you guys can go anywhere, but you can't stay here. They end up in Pergamum. They thrive there for many centuries, this occult college. And by the time the Romans get a hold of it, they are so impressed by these bona fide, spiritual, supernatural things, they say, this is cool. And they export it to Rome. And David Hunt and Alexander Hislop and the others that I showed you, they take you detail to detail that largely many of those occultic practices landed in Rome and eventually would become portions of the Roman Catholic Church. Am I saying that all the Roman Catholic Church is terrible? No. I'm saying that people love their stuff. And there was a period of time of great leaders and popes, but there were also seasons of tremendous backsliding and debauchery. And some of the vestiges of those occultic practices from the plains of Shinar are with us today. The two cross keys, one gold, one silver, are a prominent symbol of, go, the papacy. That is the coat of arms of the Pope. Go. That is on his ring. And when he puts it in wax, that's the symbol of the papacy. Go. And, of course, it's on the flag outside of Vatican City and all through the city. Also, too, go. You go inside, and there's the Vatican City on the outside. Pardon me. There's your two keys. Can you see them? And now go, finally, inside the city. Inside the Basilica of St. Peter's. That is there. Celibacy of the priests is never talked about anywhere in the Bible. Why is it one of the offices of the priesthood? Purgatory, a place that's a holding place that if you kick in enough money, your relatives on the surface can buy you out of purgatory. There's no such holding place talked about in the Bible, but it is in some of the practices of the ancient priests and priestesses on the plains of Shinar. There's more. A lot of people are very nervous, and they don't, in fact, many people, they think that David Hunt and his book, when it came out, caused quite a stir. I suggest do your own research and find out, and here's the point. Babylon is with us today. And there's going to be one more thing happening. Hold your finger here. Go to your Old Testament book of Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 5. Almost at the very end of your Bible, or Old Testament, I should say. Go to Zechariah chapter 5. Here's a prophecy that Babylon, the physical city of Babylon, is going to return. Zechariah chapter 5, please. Look down there to verse number 5. Here's Zechariah the prophet, centuries before Jesus was born. Verse 5, Zechariah 5. Then the angel who talked with me, Zechariah, came out and said to me, "Lift your eyes now. See what this is. It goes forth." What's this? Here it comes. And so I asked, verse 6, "What is it?" And he said, "It's a basket that is going forth." Here it comes. And he also said, "This is their resemblance throughout the earth." And here's what it looks like, verse 7. "Here is a lead disc covering a lid over the top of it. Lift it up, and this is something inside. Look what's sitting inside. A woman sitting inside the basket." Verse 8. "And he said, 'This is wickedness, this woman.'" And you're right in your margin here, Revelation 17, verse 3. Centuries before Jesus was born and the book of Revelation was written, here is the angel telling Zechariah, Babylon is going to be rebuilt. Where? Let's watch. "Wickedness. And he thrust her back down into the basket, threw the lid covering over its mouth." Verse 9. "Then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings." Oh, these are angels. No. They're not angels. Keep watching. "They had the wings of a stork." A stork is an unclean, non-kosher bird. And by the way, angels in the Bible always appear in the masculine form. Why are these women? Women, the notion of, the model of seduction. And the giveaway is that they have wings of a stork. These are not angels. These are deluding demons. "And they lifted up the basket." Who's inside? The woman, wickedness, Revelation 17. "Between earth and heaven." So they lifted off the ground, verse 10. "And so I said to the angel who talked to me, 'Where are they carrying the basket?' And he said to me," look at this, "'to build a house for it in the land of," circle that, "Shinar," Babylon. "When it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base." Hit or go button. This is a kind of an artist's rendition, but the greatest world city ever constructed by the humans. And there's some pretty spectacular cities even now. Dubai City, among others. And that tower thing I told you about earlier. In the planning, there are towers in the planning stages, one under construction right now, that is in Saudi Arabia, that will be taller than the Burj, Al Burj Dubai, whatever, the big tower, the one that Tom Cruise was on the outside of in his Mission Impossible movie. Burj Dubai, this one in construction, is going to eclipse that. And on the drawing boards, there are ones that are going to be 1,000 meters tall, because that's what humans do when we think we're all that in a bag of chips. Towers. When the Antichrist gets a hold of all the money, it's Revelation chapter 13, you can't buy or sell without his mark. He's running all of the militaries. He has and taken a piece of every single financial transaction on the planet. How rich will he be? And the devil will see to it that when he inhabits the man, the human, the Antichrist, at some point, "I am going to rebuild my tower." And the Bible says that's coming. And by the time he gets it built, maybe it's a 7-year project, I don't know. But by the time it's done, it will be the most breathtaking city the humans have ever seen. Oh, and God's going to destroy it all in 1 hour. Humans, K, can conceptualize some pretty cool stuff, but here's the Lord. How about my city? Peace. Yah-Salem. Yahweh is my peace. The new Jerusalem is going to blow that city away. But I wanted to spend some time on the city of Babylon because eventually the Tower of Babel that we saw earlier, whatever it was, Lucifer is not going to rest until he gets it built again. Where? On the plains of Shinar, where Babylon once stood. All right, let's keep cruising. We are now in verse number 5, and we will zoom to the end. You're like, sure we will. Here we go, chapter 11 now, verse 5. With all that as a backdrop, the city. But the Lord came down to see this city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one. Look what they're doing when they have one language. And this is what they begin to do, build a fist shaking towards me who just wants to love them. Now nothing that they purpose to do will be withheld for them. Come, let us, mention of the Trinity right here, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let us go down and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. God had to do that, you guys. Because combined human ingenuity builds lots of systems against God. Have you ever noticed? Combined human ingenuity usually results in catastrophe. You come up with stuff like golden calf. Yeah, that didn't work out well. Or an atom bomb. Is that working out well? By the way, you can also write here, Zephaniah 3 verse 9 says that in the millennial reign, God is going to unify the language once again, and we're all going to speak probably Hebrew. Verse 8. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they ceased building that city. That's what God wanted them to do in the first place. Therefore, its name, it's called Babel, now means gibberish, because there the Lord confused, or confusion, the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad all over the face of the earth. This is the genealogy of Shem. Remember Shem, Ham, and Japheth? Shem was 100 years old and begot Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Let's go to verse number 26. Verse 26. Now Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram. Hey, I thought his name was Abraham. God's going to put an H in the middle of Abram and call him Abraham. Wind or Ruach of God. You see what he does? Abram, yeah, you need the Holy Spirit, so I'm going to put a right in the middle of your name. And he will. And that's, of course, when he gives him, as we'll see next week, the promise of the Holy Land. But let's keep cruising. Haran died before his father Terah in his native land, in Ur of the Chaldees. Chaldees means destruction. Verse 29. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. I thought it was Sarah. Same thing. Sarai means contentious. And we'll see that next week. Sarah, Ruach of God, means princess. How many of you need a little Holy Spirit in your life?